times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Sabha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya. Homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassion and comprehension that dissipates delusion, by the compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by the compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by the compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by the compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by the compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy, blessed day, O happy, blessed place, O happy, blessed time, O happy, blessed path, O happy, blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here, in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma. And I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma. And I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutiyampi tatiyampi sabha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning?
Should I look at something first? I just had this experience of how judgment, in this case it was negative judgment, it's not positive judgment, of an experience can really whip up a story that I'm believing immediately, and of course then I'm projecting our ego. Is projecting that this thing that's going on is really bad.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting that simultaneously I can be in a group of people where other people are saying amen.
Uh-huh.
So uh-huh. I'm sitting there thinking, you know, it's torture chamber. Uh-huh. It is a torture chamber. Of course, I'm believing it's a torture chamber because the person who's talking is saying stuff that I think the ego said, you know, that's where, like, I was so identified. And I thought, I have an option here. I have an option here. I have an option to look at the thing that's really causing me to suffer.
Yeah.
But there was willingness, but it was completely disorienting. Because in the moment I was so right.
Yeah.
I had that experience of just being, I was so right.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a flutter for probably the first, and that was part of it. The guy kept going on and on. So then there's no, you know, it's like the itch, you know, when you're in meditation and the itch is there as soon as the bell rings.
Uh-huh.
Or the nose is water, uh-huh. or whatever, you know, and you've got the whole meditation
uh-huh.
left.
Uh-huh.
And there's no choice but to move to the breath, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I'm in for a 30-minute stretch of hell.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So it was kind of like that with this, you know. I kept thinking it's going to be over.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't ever over. I mean, it's finally over. But
but it was over even before it was over.
It was over before it was over.
Yeah.
And there was so much, this can't be real. You know,
uh-huh.
this can't be really what it is. It really is that they are causing me to suffer.
Yeah.
You know, in this case, you know, I found myself there with politics before, but, and it felt similar to that,
uh-huh.
that this person is saying something to a group of people, and I think I'm going to throw up because
uh-huh.
he's so wrong.
They're all so wrong.
Well, I thought, I projected they're all agreeing with me until people were like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what?
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's just so helpful to see projection and to see that it's possible to have great compassion in that moment. And the fascinating thing was, as soon as I was paying attention to the sensations and just breathing and watching the judgment and realizing that I had been identified with it, believing it, that actually it might not be true. Actually, that guy might be a great lover of God.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And might be doing the very, very best he can to communicate to a group of people what he thinks.
Yeah.
And that it's ego that's got the problem.
Yes.
And it was making me have a problem.
Yes.
That I could just sit with this group of people who are sincere people, just like us, uh-huh. attempting to end suffering in the way they are. Uh-huh. But no buts. It was just...
End of sentence,
end
right?
End of sentence, yeah. And to see, it's a familiar place for me to believe, to believe I'm right. And if they only would agree with me.
Yeah, well, it's a familiar identity. It's yes. like that arises.
It takes over.
But what you're describing is so classic practice because there you are. The identity comes in, takes hold, has got a firm grip, mm-hmm. right? Everything is they're wrong and what is, I'm there saying, amen. What's wrong with these people? All of that. But then what happens is it occurs to you that there's something fishy going on here. There's a space of disidentification in that moment, and the identity gets disoriented. It's like, wait a minute, I don't have Susan's energy here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Right. Oh, such relief. Yeah.
And Susan gets her life. The identity gets kind of peeled away from the life force, and there's a whole new perspective available.
Okay, so here's the koan. That's absolutely my experience. And so the thing that I continued to look at, so the koan for me was so I'm not in a current situation like this in my life, but I have been before and I know people who are. So how to discern, to practice and let go, and then how long to stay. Mm-hmm. So let's just take a marriage or whatever, you know, or I heard Sherry say about leaving the monastery where she was, you know, she had to put an X on the calendar every day for 6 months. That at some point there's an ability to practice and find freedom, but if for 6 months of practicing and having compassion, then there's a place of, and, you know, I don't actually have to go here at 8:30 every Sunday. Mm-hmm. But not to leave today, of course. I probably will never leave, but that at some place there's sort of a koan of, and when is it that the externals could shift? Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what I, because I often watch people in my work either leave too quick or stay too long, you know, mm-hmm. there's kind of a, whether it's a job or a relationship or a, you know, whatever those things are.
I know, it is such a good koan, isn't it? You know, and this just dropped in, so I'll just say it because you're a mom and you probably know this mm-hmm. line. I quote Mary Poppins. Mm-hmm. when the darling two little Banks kids asked her, "Will you stay forever?" And she says, "Oh, that's a pine crest promise easily made, easily broken." She said, "I'll stay until the wind changes."
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
And I love that line. Mm-hmm. And I draw on that all the time because we're not in charge of when the wind changes.
Yeah.
You know? The best we can do is feel it. You know, we just get swept in the wind and then it goes, you know, or things change. Mm-hmm. Life just changes. But it's so fun to sit with it as a koan because we get to watch the I who tries to come in and, you know, blow as if it is the wind.
Right.
Or interpret everything or make something mean this or try to read signs, you know, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, the I that kind of gets reestablished in wondering that. And when what we can practice is just sort of feeling the wind. Yeah. Is there more?
Nope, that's good.
Thank you.
Well, a couple things about looking at the I, and that just brought up one of them, sort of the more overt I and the more subtle I. And so I had an experience last week somewhat similar to what was just being described where I was listening to someone say something and just everything in me went, no, you know, just that mm-hmm. really visceral, I'm not going there kind of thing, you know, you can't do that, you can't say that. And I mean, just really strongly, and I was acting some of it out in private, and just realizing, you know, this is familiar. This is not an unusual event. I've been here before, and just seeing how there's a there's one way in which I comes up, which I was describing to myself as kind of drawing a line in the sand of like, okay, I'll let you get away with this stuff, but you're not, and it's I that's saying it, but you're not gonna, you know, it, externally it's to the other person, you can't do that, I'm not going there, but really it's I saying, I'm not gonna let you get past this one. This particular conditioning. It's like there's a bigger investment in holding on to who I am in those cases, where there's other times where, you know, I might say, well, you know, okay, you could do that, or, you know, it's not a big a deal.
Yeah.
So just seeing how, whoa, you know, there must be something there I'm not supposed to see, or I wouldn't be having this kind of, you know, this is over the top.
This is really, this is a strong reaction even for ego.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so just, you know, and I couldn't quite get out of it right away because it was, you know, over, well, principles and what I believe in. But I just seeing that it couldn't have been really all of that was enough to just kind of let it go for a while and just say, okay, well, okay, let's just, and then after a while it just like, well, wasn't that, you know, it's like, that's not that big a deal, is it?
Yeah, like, is it like you, okay, so is it sort of like you got kind of close to an ego boundary?
I think so, yeah.
And so that was the huge explosion of a reaction.
No!
And then you were there watching it. Mm-hmm.
At least somebody was on the edges of all of that emotion.
So I kind of saw that. And then it just sort of dissipated, and you got to see that too, that the energy just sort of dissipated. But what it seems like was the insight from that experience was you can recognize when it's over the top and not take that as seriously as maybe you did 6 months ago or a year. Right. You know, basically you're getting it that, okay, that's...
Yeah, getting that I don't have to believe that it's about this particular event.
Yeah, or even this particular person.
That's right, or this particular person. You. Absolutely, either that one or this one.
Either the external person or whoever it feels like it is engaged in the internal.
Yeah. But, you know, there's probably something along the line in my life that, you know, arose where I had that experience of, no, you know. But so I bring that to these other experiences that aren't the same, but they feel like the same, you know. So just what it's just brought up is, you know, keeping watch for when do those moments come up, this is where I draw the line in the sand, you know.
Yeah.
This is where I'm not willing to let go of who I am, where I'm not willing, where ego doesn't want me to see who I am.
Mm. Oh, that is such good information to have. Yeah. It's such good information for the practitioner to have.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Where that line is.
That's right. Right. And what are the signals, and how do we know when we're there?
Yes.
You know? And then a second thing that's more about the more subtle aspects of I. So somebody loaned me a book that they had read. It happened to be a novel, and I actually don't read novels all that much anymore, but they'd liked it, and so it was one of those things where I said, okay, well, here it is in my hand, I guess I'll read it. Mm-hmm. And it was fascinating. It was about somebody on the autism spectrum who had set up their life so that everything was regimented and controlled, I mean, to the minute and to the, you know, and so, and then as the book unfolded, you watch that unravel because basically he fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was one of those, you'll do for the love of others what you would not be willing to do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fascinated by how, I mean, you know, this person was so extreme in the way they had set up their life to keep it safe and manageable.
Mm-hmm.
And as the more I read, I thought, I do things like that. You know, I don't do it like that.
Yeah.
But there is
that extreme.
But there is a way to fold the towels, and there is a way, the order in which you do things. Yeah. And there is the timing that, you know, if it gets out of control, it has to be, you know. Uh-huh. And I just thought, wow, you know. It's just really interesting to see all the little ways in which I is maintained.
Yeah.
That don't feel like that. That just feel like, well, that's the way it's done.
Yeah. And again, it just strikes me that that novel is such a helpful mirror to the practitioner to get all that information that's coming in for you to see.
Yeah.
Where the I gets rebuilt,
yes.
Where the I gets reinforced and established.
Yeah. Yeah, so not just the line in the sand events,
but
the choices of, you know, when I brush my teeth and what I do next you know, and to the extent that those become non-negotiable, something is taken over other than just a schedule that works, you know?
Yeah, it really is. It's not what, it's how.
Yeah.
And so you can, when those big line in the sand moments where it's in the body and the big energy and all of that that are not hard to miss, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And in the more subtle, kind of sublime ways of, even when a way to fold the towels gets regimented into an identity doing it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No reason to be bored.
No reason to be bored. There's just helpful information coming in all the time, when we choose to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, Jen.
I was just quick on a couple of things as people are talking. It keeps coming up that. And of course, the entire way the I is maintained is in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah.
The routines actually don't keep the I in place. It's the conversation about the routines.
Yeah.
Because that's the only way that there would be any clinging to or identification with. Like, you wouldn't even know I have to fold the towels at a certain way or at a certain time without the conversation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, life would just give you the information to fold the towels.
Yeah.
Same thing with the when is it time to go.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't need to be any conversation about it.
Yeah.
You know, we're just here, we're here, we're here, we're here, we're here. It's amazingly simple.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so without a conversation, everything is just exactly as it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's only in the conversation that the illusion of a separate self comes into being.
Yeah, and it's really, it's amazing. It's down to minute levels, including, what the hell am I going to know? How do I do that?
Yeah.
How do I not be in the conversation and that's the conversation?
Yeah.
You know? I know, but if I can't get out of the conversation, then how am I going to, that's the conversation, you know? And there's no, oh God, you know, I'm never going to be able to, if I can't get out of the conversation.
That's the conversation, yeah.
And that it's all okay.
Mm-hmm.
Every part of it, including, well, being in the conversation.
Yeah. Because even, okay, I'm just in the conversation, it's a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've just been really, really seeing that, how incredibly simple it is and how unconditional awareness is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? There's nothing that can happen to us. There's nothing we could do wrong. There's no error we could make.
Yeah.
That it's all waking up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe we're in a conversation about whatever, including waking up, but it's all just, meanwhile, it's all unfolding perfectly.
Yeah. I go back to something Sherry said in a radio program months ago about, to a caller, that it's inevitable.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so what you're pointing to is it is all unfolding. Awareness doesn't need an object, or it doesn't need it, you know, it's just unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
And so what it sounds like you're pointing to is that is all happening. And then a conversation happens about everything that is mm-hmm. just happening, kind of pulls up this little mound of conditioned illusion.
Mm-hmm.
We are trained to go with it.
Go with it. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And but that's all it is just a habit that's exactly. just trying to go with it. Exactly. And then we get it. Those of yeah. us that are lucky to have to the tools to do this, we kind of yeah. get it.
Yeah.
And then we dissolve back into the unfolding.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good word, habit. That's been coming up a lot for me too, where I've just been having this tremendous, again, the simplicity of it, just counting the breath, just all the time. Yeah. And what that does, of course, is create the container to see how often the attention leaves.
Yeah.
And that it's amazing that the attention comes back, and the first thing with it is, that's perfectly all right. Mm-hmm. That's perfectly all right, of course. You know, that's how many kalpas of the habit mm-hmm. of leaving. Mm-hmm. And to have any, now I'm putting some extra words to it, but to have any idea that it's going to be easy or, you know, happen like that, or it's just another conversation.
Yeah.
And that really, you know, we were talking about the topic of self-care was coming up a couple of weeks ago, and that somehow really, I've been looking at that with it in the sense of that the kindness of that is perfectly all right, that the attention comes back here, and that it's immediately held in kindness is so important in the, I don't quite know how to articulate it, but it's just that kindness, that care, is what is.
Uh-huh.
And that judgment that someone started us off with, and that conversation, all that gets overlaid over it. Mm-hmm. But somehow it feels so critical for the being to be exquisitely cared for in that process of waking up. Otherwise, the attention is so vulnerable to getting pulled off.
So if this is what you're saying, that sort of bed of kindness mm-hmm. is so important to make sure is there, mm-hmm. so that when the attention wanders off, mm-hmm. if there's not that kindness or compassion as the sort of the default, the underlying mm-hmm. thing there, it's sort of a, in a way, kind of reliving the trauma of when, you know, yeah. of when we had to leave ourselves in the first place,
right,
you know,
right.
And so to have the softness and the mm-hmm. warmth and the whatever of compassion to mm-hmm. be there, mm-hmm. it kind of facilitates
the, yeah, because the otherwise,
attention back.
If there isn't that, then it goes to the habit, uh-huh. and the habit is for the judgment and the criticism and the
yeah.
assessing, and then what's happening is the attention is being trained to not want that.
Yeah.
You know, to try to get away from that,
yeah.
which is, of course, perpetuating it.
Right.
But it doesn't seem like that.
You're right. Right.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. And that why it's the ultimate egocentricity is to lack care for the being. Mm-hmm. It keeps it so firmly in place. Mm-hmm. Because then there's an I who's not getting cared for and then is a victim mm-hmm. and is owed something. And I mean, it just keeps the whole eye so firmly in place.
Yeah.
And caring, what I was saying is caring for, or just caring. It's not even for the being, but because what it is it's just a caring, and that this being is no different than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, of course, it's a recipient of that care.
Yeah.
Puts one squarely in generosity and receiving in abundance. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing left to do but respond from that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you could say give, but then that, again, they're going to give.
Well, but that points to why spiritual practice begins when the being
yeah,
begins.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. It's very simple.
And so sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet.
Yeah.
It is sweet.
Yeah. June.
That little giant holes and everything else was great. that was wonderful. So I don't know what to say. renews my commitment to practice. The year-long thing that the guy is doing that is being so powerful for those who are doing it,
mm-hmm.
I had never joined.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the conversation, this is not for me, I can't do this. I do these other things and stuff. And just in the last week, that mirror has been very clear. So I'm going to join. And the, you know, there's a lot of conversation about that. And so what was just said, just feels like a breath of fresh air. And because it there have been equal parts dreading getting into that that practice, and a kind of just willingness to do it because it showed up in it has showed up in our lives.
So there's the equal parts of the dread and then the willingness, and what was just shared
takes all the judgment out of the dread part. And brings into sharper relief just all the little side conversations and the ideas and that. It's just, that's all it is.
That's all it is.
There's nothing else going on. There's nothing real happening here.
Yeah, I've been here before. I've seen all this stuff. This isn't real. And this is a yes, just like every other yes. And this is conditioning, just like every other conditioning. It just has felt real, and now it doesn't.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, what a relief. Breath of fresh air is a perfect metaphor.
And the other thing I was going to say was, if there's something that's kind of the opposite of the autism scale, I'm in that.
I don't care how. I don't care if the towels are folded.
There's only one thing that I can think of that needs to be done in a specific order. Well, two things. One is scrambling eggs. You've got to break the egg first.
Is what? A golf swing. Yeah.
And there's a whole lot of conversation about it. I'm just seeing, I know, because sometimes it, having a more structured life, having more structured days would be, I could see, would be helpful for, you know, kind. And there's just so much, I can't do it, talk going on. It's just not me, it's not how I function. Talk, that's just a story. It's not me, it's just how I function.
It's a conversation. Anything that uses the first person pronoun is a story, right? I mean, it's like, that's what we've got, me or I. Just, or it's just me, or, yeah, all of that, yeah. So good to see. Lakota.
I just wanted to share something funny I saw recently, kind of out conditioning, and just it was such a clear look at how absurd so much of his conversation is, how it all causes suffering, and oh my, this might, so I'll just share this little thing that happened. I was at a doctor's office recently with their kind of requisite pile of magazines. And I was sitting right next to me, and I was having this experience of like, oh, don't look at him. And I was like, oh, it was like, there was like Newsweek magazine, and I was like, well, you can find out what's happening in the world. I was like, no, don't do that. It was like back and forth. And oh boy. So that was a whole workshop in and of itself. And then I was like, okay, then there was the bargaining. Okay, I won't look at the Newsweek, because that's clearly, you know, but there's like this Sunset magazine. You just look at some pictures. Like, what's the harm in that? I was like, okay. So I'm kind of like flipping through Sunset, and I'm just not reading anything.
Because that would be clearly wrong.
Right, that would be wrong. Definitely wrong. We're looking at pictures, it's like, well, maybe. So I'm looking, flip it through. And it's like, and then it's just that process of desire for what I don't have. Was just so brought into relief. It was like, oh, I want to go on a camping trip to Jackson Hole and have an awesome little trailer like that. And then I wrote the page and I'm like, oh, I want to have an awesome backyard like that with a little reading book and a hammock. And then I wrote the page and I was like, oh, I want to learn how to cook delicious meals like that and have beautiful people over and a wonderful little backyard for it. It was just like going on and on. It's like, oh my God. This is so awesome. I flipped this one page and there was a write-up done on this one Zen meditation center that also happens to be like a hot springs kind of resort. I was like, I want to go practice at a Zen meditation center. And like I heard those words. I was like, ha ha! Gotcha! Oh, you know, wow. It's like, that's so funny. You know, yeah. It's like, you are practicing in a Zen meditation center, silly. And it's like, well, yeah, but not one with a hot spring. And it was just like, aha. You know, it was so great to see that. I was like, yep, there it is. It's just this process of abandoning this here now, projecting what I want onto something else. Could be anything. Can be, you know, slice of watermelon, or the dream home, or beach vacation, whatever.
And as you found out, even everything, even something you already have.
Actually, I was kind of recording and listening about it, and I was kind of, some hilarious thing dropped in that, like, I bet you that if some Sunset Magazine photojournalist came here and did a little thing on this place, and even maybe had a picture of me somewhere in the background, if I saw that in a Sunset Magazine, I'll bet you I would see that and go, I want to do that. Because it's that crazy.
It's because it's that process.
It's that process.
Yeah. The process of wanting something that isn't, quote, I don't have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the I never has, because by its very existence, it is not having. It is not having.
Yeah. It can never have.
Right.
You know, it's so clear seeing all that that, you know, it's a total setup. Because, of course, you know, if, of course, I go and buy that beautiful little blue hoodie that's in there that I'm lusting after or whatever. Then I get it, I take it home, I put it on. Instantly, that's not it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not it. You know? Or I build that beautiful patio that's in the magazine. And I get it, and it's like, just back to that dissatisfaction. Because it's the process, like you said, it's the process of dissatisfaction.
Because one process doesn't lead to another, right?
And the whole thing set up on this thing of like how I supposedly will feel kind of like that. There's this kind of whole thing, like as I'm looking at a picture, I was feeling these feelings of like, oh, it'd be so great. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that I miss is that I'm feeling those right now. Mm-hmm. I'm having that right now.
Exactly.
Well, how about if I'm in a doctor's office and I'm flipping through Sunset Magazine, feeling all these feelings and thinking like, this is great.
Yeah.
You know, I'm having the experience I want to have.
Exactly.
Right now.
I'm in a backyard with a full, you know, just having the experience that picture is sort of evoking in you.
Yeah.
And instead of going with want, go to receive.
Yeah. It's huge. And just getting at a deeper level, how critical it is to change the relationship with that process.
Yeah.
And to not go there anymore, how it's just completely life-sucking, you know? It could have a person spending their whole life chasing that stuff and never feeling satisfied, and it's got to end, you know? Yeah. When something so much better is possible.
Yeah, and just as we were talking about a second ago, and the only thing that's holding it in place is a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's got to end. Yeah. We know how to do it.
Yeah. It's really quite simple. Mm-hmm. Just, drop the conversation, get here.
And receive all this information.
This is great.
Yeah.
This is great. This is as good as it gets.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you.
Well, two things that just came up with regard to that, and what was just being said. I remember one time walking up the hill on Darby Lane, in the big hill, sort of up toward the first cattle guard, and there's an amazing sky, and the clouds were gorgeous, and I got there, and I looked around, and I thought, God, it would be great to live in a place like this. Truly. And I thought, oh, wait, I do live in a place like this. But it was really, it was that, I could have fallen for that.
Uh-huh.
You know, I wish I could live in a place like this.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Just slide right into something you don't have when you do have it.
And I also am reminded that a number of years ago we did a peace storming in Los Angeles, and I started noticing the billboards. Mm-hmm. And virtually, whether they said, they used the word explicitly or not, sometimes they did, virtually every single billboard, the message was escape. Mm-hmm. Literally, escape. I need escape from this. So anyway,
yeah,
that all came up. Well, what came up initially when we were talking about, you know, the going or staying or the doing or not doing is another thing that I remember Sherry talking about was the ABAB. So if you feel like I just don't know, mm-hmm, then as I don't know whether to stay or go, let's say, mm-hmm, on Monday I'm going to absolutely commit myself to imagining I'm going.
Yeah.
And be absolutely, just see everything there is to see about that. On Tuesday, I am staying.
Yeah.
And you just do that back and forth, until we have a chance to actually see.
Yes.
All the stuff that's holding each side in place. And the other thing I was seeing in that's helpful is that it would expose any resistance in either direction. You know? Uh-huh. And the anchors in either direction.
Yeah.
To get a sense of what all is going on. Because if I'm just stuck in the angst of it, then the experience is of angst. It's not of clarity.
Yeah.
So I was just noticing that how helpful that would be in any situation to take that other tactic she's talked about.
Uh-huh.
And just
that.
Go in each direction and just play it out. What would it actually be like?
Yes.
And because the other thing I realized is that when I'm stuck, I don't want to go there. Mm-hmm. But if I don't actually have to go there except to let myself go there in the moment, mm-hmm, and just see what that would be like, mm-hmm, I open up an experience that otherwise is really closed.
Yeah.
Or if I, in the other direction as well.
Yeah, so it's what you're describing is a beautiful example of the spirit of inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just exploring,
right,
just finding out. And I project what you're saying in there is that it's not even really about the going or the staying. It's not the content.
No.
It's all about unearthing that resistance and seeing through this duality and seeing how the voices of this, and it really is the process of freedom.
Yeah.
Instead of about the content of what to do.
Yes, thank you. That I hadn't seen it as clearly as you just said it. And the other thing I realized is it's a kind process, and it does not come from urgency.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to look at this and look at this and look at this and explore this.
Uh-huh.
As long as exploring is where I am.
Yeah.
And then, as has been said, at some point, it will just become clear. But at that point, a much wider range of possibility will have become clear to me.
Yeah.
Than would have been otherwise.
Yes. Yes, because we will have moved into a totally different place.
Right.
Through that practice, right, or whatever kind of practice we employ with that, sitting with it as a koan.
Right.
It enables us to just expand to that larger perspective.
Yeah, it gets us out of the victim role.
Yeah,
gets us out of a trapped role. And as I'm also seeing it, this is a word you use also. It puts us in a receiving role.
Yeah,
because all the information is there.
Yeah,
and it puts us in a place where we're open to receive it.
Yeah, so much more a place of expansion.
Yeah, thank you.
Just two things about seeing through the illusion of a separate self. That modern Zen story about Sunset Magazine just reminded me that reminded me of something I saw recently about greed, hatred, and delusion. Just kind of blasting through that.
But,
you know, there's the greed of I want that,
uh-huh,
the hatred of I hate them because they have it, and I hate myself because I don't have
uh-huh
it, and then the delusion that there's something to have and someone to have it.
Yeah. Wow. It really does kind of hammer on all of those, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Just completely blow it apart. There's nothing to have, no one to have it.
Yeah.
It just, it's just been a helpful little tool, you know, to pay attention to that. And I just, in the conversation about care and self-care and all of that, I've just been really seeing more clearly recently how the intelligence that animates doesn't discriminate in its information about care. It's just firing information, seems, all the time about caring for all that is. Mm-hmm. And the discrimination between what gets cared for out there and what's not allowed to be cared for here happens in the conversation in the head. Mm-hmm. So I've been practicing with that, like, for example, like really trusting that experience of being informed by life, mm-hmm. when it drops in to like stir the soup. Mm-hmm. You know, when you just have that religious experience of that is exactly the moment to stir the soup.
Yeah.
And it just comes through and do it. And then, you know, noticing when it drops in, water, get the human some water. There's the no, you can't have that because, well, there's the soup to stir. and so a few months ago I spotted that and was just practicing with... when it dropped in to stir the soup, when it dropped in to get the humans some water, to be non-discriminating in the way that the intelligence is, right?
Yeah, to respond in the moment, to when what's dropping in the moment.
Yeah, and to do the things for the human that the intelligence was dropping in, mm-hmm. just as I would
for anything.
Take care of the soup, yeah. So, and it just, you can really get to see how it is the ultimate egocentricity, mm-hmm. to not allow things for the human when the intelligence is just completely, mm-hmm. undiscriminatingly firing this information about how to care for everything. Mm-hmm. When it drops in to rake the path, and then when we're doing that, it drops in to have the water.
Because it's not, life is not discriminating. The human care has to happen a certain way, mm-hmm. and then the rest of life has to happen a different way. It's just dropping in information all the time,
yeah.
and the discriminating element happens in egocentric karmic conditioning, in a conversation.
Yeah.
And so what you've been practicing is dropping the discriminating part and just responding and seeing it all as one, the human care or the care of the soup or the care of the path or the care of the cat or the care of the everything is just, it sounds like sort of that the attitude of mind is that the human is it's kind of the thy will, not my will, but thy will. Just mm-hmm. do that. Why now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just what an amazing feeling that is to be really like living in that process of attention on how the intelligence is just sharing information to care for all that is all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like living in a bath of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's relaxing, not in our hands, and giving it 1,000%.
It's just the best. I'm just, you know, as you're talking, I'm just kind of going to that experience of just, you know, it is the ultimate egocentricity to do the opposite, and it's the ultimate attention on awareness to do that, which you're mm-hmm. describing. Because mm-hmm. when it's on the field of awareness, that's how we're going to be open to all of that information, all those promptings.
Yeah, and then everything just feels like dancing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Sequoia.
Oh, the Sunset Magazine was interesting. I, that is, there's just so much about that. That is one of those things that just seems so innocuous.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, there's even a center in Menlo Park or something, the Sunset Magazine Center, you know, where you can go to and see all these lovely things. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I had a young family, I was an avid Sunset reader, you know. And I'd get that magazine and I'd read it from cover to cover, and it took me a long time, but finally one day, it was before awareness practice, it was like, wait a minute. I'm never going to have the life that's in this magazine. What? And every time I read it, I feel unhappy. you know, I keep I read this and I look up and see where I live. I read, see where I live, you know. And it's always like, someday I'm going to figure this out, you know. And I really got it.
Wow.
You know? And I ended my subscription.
Oh, okay. So maybe it wasn't before the days of.
And maybe not. No, really. I just didn't have a formal name, but you know, I knew I saw that. It was evil.
This is not helpful.
This is not helpful
to my happiness.
Yeah, and it just reminds me of just, you know, how those, those thoughts, those distractions that come through, they just seem so benign.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, and there's that lovely, you know, backyard, and, you know, and I'm going to give, I see myself even doing it now, you know, like, yeah, you know, my hermitage, it just needs this one little thing. You know, and someday I'm going to, like, get it together and I'm going to figure out how to do this. And then I have this vision of it just in perfection, you know, and I will be the one that have restored it to complete perfection, you know, and just how that goes.
Wow. Yeah. Just so, yeah, to see, it is such a, the same process on a very different, and you know, maybe more subtle level, but the point that you're making a second ago, that it feels like a treat. It feels like benign. It feels like something that's not, certainly not hurting anything and probably helping, you know. But it's so not kind to be.
It's totally not. I mean, in some ways, they seem even more difficult to catch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the kinds of things that just run through that, you know.
Yeah.
And just bringing a lot of extra attention to that, being in any place but here these days, you know.
Yeah.
And it is a hero's journey, it seems. You know, I just find myself saying, no!
No to what?
Anything that's coming through.
Oh, to the conversation.
Yeah. It's just, and that's when I catch it.
Yeah.
You know, to just, don't want to miss any more life, you know?
Yeah, this heightened vigilance about how these conversations, this onslaught is subtle, they're constant, they're, you know, all that, taking you away from this beautiful life, this perfect life, just like it is.
Yeah.
And so this vigilance is saying no to those conversations, to recognize them and to not indulge them.
The other thing that was arising was that, you know, in that time that I spent reading the Sunset Magazine, it was time that, that actually could have been engaged with life, taking those little baby steps toward having the life of my dreams.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like life maybe gives us a little nudge in a direction, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm seeing this in this current year-long thing, you know, and that, you know, there's like little bitty things that could be done toward in that direction, and life is there to assist.
Yeah. So let me see if I'm with you. So, because there's two things that are dropping in around that. So one is you're looking at this Sunset Magazine, which I've never even heard of until today. But anyway, so it's got apparently these dream lives, you know, depicted here. And you notice that you want that, and it can take you to, you look up and you see you don't have it. So there's the suffering route, right? To see what I don't have, and this is what. Or there's the way that life could be nudging you toward little baby steps that you could be building alive. Look, I love this.
Right.
I love this is what the heart resonates with, or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe I can create something like that, or I can help. You know, there's something in front of me to do.
Just
one little thing. But if we go to look what I'm living and look at the kind of crap that I have in my life, that's not following the nudge of what kind of life I can create with life's promptings.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's that thing of that just indulging in the distraction, being lost in distraction forever, when I could actually be moving toward
actually taking it.
Taking some, or being in life.
Yeah.
Having the satisfaction of being in life.
Yeah.
And having it move me.
I don't know how to say it, moving toward. But it is moving you, right? Yeah. It's that dance.
Yeah.
It's that dance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just have seen that because I've been having this, there's this opportunity to spend some time in this year-long project of putting some attention on what it is, where we want to be in different areas of our life, health, you know, da-da-da-da. I shouldn't be, but the amount of resistance that comes up to, like, just getting clear with all of that, you know? I know, I'd rather be in distraction. No, I'd rather be in distraction.
So you're getting to see how ego is reacting to this real possibility of seeing, okay, I'm really being invited to look at what are those little tiny steps I can take every day to get to a certain level of health or whatever, relationships, money, whatever. And I react in a way that by pulling you into distraction. No, I don't want to focus on that. I want to be in distraction. Yeah. I want to be daydreaming.
We'll do that later.
Yeah. And it's surprising the ferocity that you're you're seeing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and just one last thing. All of that, everything you're describing, is being held in this big old circle of awareness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even those days when you were reading Sunset Magazine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not like you were an inch in somewhere all the
time. Or being inched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It feels good.
Yeah. It's that back to that unfolding. It's all unfolding.
Yeah. I just love that this morning and being reminded that it's all done in the ground of kindness. And
Kevin.
This process that is being discussed is both hilarious and it's just such a source of suffering. It's so universal, you know. It's not just reading the magazine, but it's just walking through life and you see that beautiful couple holding hands or you see whatever it is, that billboard with something. And just to carry that perspective around constantly is just to live just immersed in this soup of suffering, you know. I remember a time when it seemed benign or even like a treat to look through the magazine and have those experiences of, oh, I want that, or I could do that, you know, and as the years have gone on, it's no longer benign. It either goes one extreme or the other. It's completely obsessing about, well, this is the one.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm researching and I'm lost for, you know, days and weeks. I'm finding that perfect trailer online. I'm contacting people and I'm finding places to store it.
Building this dream.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm buying materials.
Yeah.
Stockpiling them in the backyard. And it might not even be practical at all. You know, it's just not. So either I get lost in that, latching onto that content. Either conditioning is lost in that as the answer to get away from the feeling of lack, which motivates the whole thing.
Yeah.
Or much more often it goes to the immediate, it's like there's not even a desire to have the thing because there's such a pain at not having it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in seeing that beautiful whatever person, house, place is just immediately felt as that there's something terribly wrong with me because that's not available to me in this lifetime, you know?
Yeah.
And so that is just, it's a real hell state because all the things that are beautiful to this person cause immediate suffering and self-hatred because they just get
experienced within that perspective, within that orientation of something is fundamentally wrong with me.
Because I'll never have that.
Sorry?
Because I'll never have that.
Right. Right. And whichever comes first.
Yeah. Because there are two ways that it gets you to that bottom line. There's something fundamentally wrong with me. Either I can put all ego, and the I is literally the ego I, puts all this energy into getting it, buying the trailer and researching and buying materials, destroying, and then maybe getting whatever that is that it's supposed to be wanting and still feeling terrible and not being happy, or just seeing it. And it just cuts out all that whole process and goes straight to the terrible because I don't have it and there's something fundamentally wrong with me. But both paths lead to there's something fundamentally wrong with me.
Yeah, usually in the first one it'll sabotage the whole thing before I can even have it.
Yeah, that's
why. So there's not even an experience of getting it and then being still dissatisfied. It's just
going for it.
Going immediately to, well, let's prove that there's something wrong with you. You really can't have this thing.
Yeah.
And then the tricky part of it for me, I've been seeing, is that it does seem maintained by a conversation, though the conversation seems to be so pervasive and sort of just this ongoing process within which that experience happens. So it's not like I see the picture and then there's a conversation that comes in that says, there's something wrong with you,
right,
or there's something wrong with me and I can't have that. That's just the feeling that immediately comes because there's been a conversation for so long about that, that then this thing just happens and then it just goes there.
That's a really important point. That there's no... It sort of goes back to what we were talking about last week about, or sometimes, every conversation eventually leads to a train wreck. So we're set up by all these other conversations that feel so benign, so innocent, so there's nothing, I'm not in a hell state here. But it's all a setup. Because sometime, at some point, that hammer will fall, you know? And it's because of that conversation that we've indulged when it didn't feel so dangerous to do so, that we're set up for that hell.
Yeah, and just how it's all trying to get away from that basic feeling of lack and something's wrong and
well, it says it is anyway.
Right.
That's the ruse.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A good word for it. And just seeing lately, something that was kind of mentioned earlier, is that feeling itself is totally unrelated to whatever content has triggered it.
Yeah.
And I'm just having this experience over and over. I mean, just lately, right? Just seeing... It's the same feeling regardless of the content, you mm-hmm. know, whether it's somebody judging or there's fear about something or whatever it is, it's the same physical vibration of, and there's different variances of it, there's different degrees of it.
Yeah.
And in this extreme, it's like, well, there's a black masked intruder in the house, and that's the kind of like where it goes.
Uh-huh.
But it's all the same thing, and it has nothing to do with the content.
Yeah.
And so to not run from that feeling, to stay with it, is the only way to take its power away, and rather than endlessly trying to figure out how to manage one's life in a way to deal with those pieces of content which cause this feeling.
Yeah, because what you're closing in on or describing so perfectly is that it's never about the content. It really, what we're looking at are processes all the time. There is no something out there. It's always a process that we're looking at, that we're uncovering and bringing awareness to. and conditioning's efforts to always try to pin it to a content, you're just snipping those left and right. Nope, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that. It's this that needs this being the process, the sensations, that all of those connections that needs the and is receiving the conscious, compassionate awareness, the attention. Yeah, it's never about the content.
Yeah, it's both really exciting because it gives like a real workable, like, I mean, this is this, by dealing with this thing, it could deal with everything, and that's like, wow. And it's also really, really terrifying because that's the thing I've been running from my whole life, you know. It, once I get that, that's why it's the thing to go after, and oh my God, now I gotta go after it.
Well, and I would encourage you to entertain the possibility that it's conditioning that's terrified. Mm-hmm. That the human is not terrified at all by that prospect. It's quite the opposite.